Well, thank you. I'm very happy to be here to talk about rural EMS for children and a project that I've been working on. Really, this topic in itself has three strikes against it. If you talk to people about doing this kind of research, they'll tell you, well, don't do research on rural issues, that's tough. You know? And, well, don't do EMS research because that's tough. And if you focus on children, well, that's tough too. And so the combination of the three, you know, I had a number of people telling me, oh, you don't want to do rural EMS for children. It's just too difficult to do this kind of research. But that's exactly why I felt that this is an important area. And so following my own passion and interest, I have spent some time working on this with some colleagues, and I think that it really is an important underserved area. I have nothing to disclose. And really the intent of this project was to explore EMS provider attitudes and beliefs around the training and education and the care that's provided in rural communities for children. And we wanted to really try to identify some potential strategies that we could propose that would improve the quality of care that's provided in these settings. And we'll go through some of the issues that relate to this. You know, really the goal of saying that for both patient safety, for reducing mortality and morbidity, all of these factors really sort of drive home, you know, the need for identifying some interventions that potentially can move us in that direction. So really there's very little that's known about the rural disparities. Most of our trauma research happens in urban settings. That's where most of our level one trauma centers are. That's where most of our research base is. And of course, doing this kind of research in rural communities with children, and there aren't that many children by comparison that are being experiencing this type of injury and trauma. So the combination has led to pretty much a void in quality research that relates to these disparities. The contributing factors that you, of course, would imagine would lead to some of the disparities could include things like, you know, long access times, you know, for both responding to an event as well as transport to a hospital. So many rural hospitals don't have pediatric capabilities, so at a minimum, you're going to be bypassing a rural hospital to get to a pediatric quality center. Those can be, you know, hours for transport time. So we talk about in urban areas, you know, it's minutes. In rural settings, it can be hours, both for response and even notification of the types of injuries that occur. And of course, 911. I mean, iPhone apps are great. I love my iPhone, right? But there are many areas in the U.S. in rural communities that still don't have cell phone coverage. There are dead pockets, and so you will consistently hear from rural EMS providers that they can't rely on cell phones. They have to drive the unit up to the top of the hill before they'll get cell phone coverage again. So, you know, the access issues around communications and the quality of radio communication systems is potentially an issue as well. So, and then of course, things like oversight, medical control. In an urban area, you have board-certified emergency medicine physicians that are providing the medical control for EMS. In rural communities, it's often a family practice physician that might operate in a clinic down the road. And you may not have any pediatric specialty training around EMS. So all these things can certainly contribute to that. So the lack of familiarity with pediatric emergency care, so you may not have had the training, but then you add that to low volumes can create sort of a double whammy in terms of the issues that are faced by EMS. Continuing education, in most cases, we don't have access for individuals to be able to go into pediatric, you know, hospitals, certainly in rural communities, to get hands-on experience with injury and trauma, especially. And some of the programs that are available are not nearly as simulation-rich as one would like. And so these are some things that we were looking at. And of course, again, there's not a lot of evidence. Some people, you know, suggest that we should do this or that, but there really is a limited amount of evidence available in terms of what's truly effective as it relates to children and EMS in rural communities. So from the hospital standpoint, we'll talk about that in a sec, but from the pre-hospital study, you know, you can see that, you know, there are studies that have looked at sort of the pre-hospital airway management, and this is not specific to you know, rural settings, but you might have a tenfold difference in the likelihood of you know, endotracheal intubation by where you live. So things like, do you have, you know, paramedic versus EMT level care, but also what does your medical control require in terms of protocols? You know, what's your experience level? Is the scoop and run environment where you try to get them off to a hospital as quick as you can, or do you want to try to do more interventions at the scene? So all these factors lead to a tremendous amount of variability in whether children are receiving more advanced airways in the community. And of course, there's controversy, as we know, around pediatrics and whether children should be receiving endotracheal intubations in the field. And so there's limited evidence, and some evidence that says, well, we're increasing time at the scene, that's not a good thing. Some saying we might be increasing complications, other problems associated with that. And there are other techniques that might be more effective. So again, without good evidence, without good abilities to study some of this, we're still in this kind of gray zone and a lot of variability of care, which from a health outcome standpoint, variability of care means we're going to have variability of outcomes. So, and of course, when you look at the hospital setting specifically, you see that rural hospitals typically have lower quality of care for children, okay? And that's been studied. The Dahmer study is a really good example of one that looks specifically at this. And of course, some of that's related to resources and capabilities of those individual people, but it also relates to things like, you know, low volumes and other factors that contribute to hospitals' readiness and their ability to care for children. So medication errors being much more common in rural communities for children especially. So my thought was, well, as we start to look at this, if we're seeing these kinds of problems in the hospital setting, there's probably a good likelihood that we're seeing similar problems in the pre-hospital setting. So, and of course, Tom Esposito's report has done a lot of work in Montana over the years. Potentially 9% of all trauma deaths among children in a rural community are potentially preventable, and a lot of this relates to emergency department management and doing what's right in a timely manner. So in this study, the goal was to actually do focus groups in three states. We ended up doing two. The third state was Maryland, which I was not successful in getting a statewide EMS system to play along with doing focus groups, but ended up doing five focus groups each in rural Washington State and rural Arkansas. We provided a $50 gift card as an incentive to participate, but really, I think that from the standpoint that many of these folks, certainly in Washington State, are volunteers, that seemed like a reasonable approach to helping appreciate the kind of contribution of time that goes into this kind of study. We provided refreshments. We had an organized script that we used to certainly guide the focus group process. And we recruited from a variety of different channels. And of course, with rural EMS, it's not easy to go and say, you know, give me your list of certified EMS personnel and we'll invite everybody. In most cases, states won't give you that information. So we relied on many of the rural EMS agencies and EMS councils that might exist and posting flyers at rural hospitals to try to do recruitment. And actually, we had good participation and didn't have a problem recruiting. So, and each focus group lasted about an hour to an hour and a half. Most were closer to an hour, and usually we were able to cover it with a relatively small group. So why did we choose Washington State and Arkansas? Well, in part because I've worked extensively in both states around EMS and trauma. I spent nearly 15 years with the Washington State Department of Health as both the epidemiologist for the EMS and trauma system, but also as the section manager for trauma designation and regional quality improvement. So I had a very broad understanding of the issues in Washington, and also spent 3 years in Little Rock with the Arkansas Children's Hospital working on the development of their trauma system and on the faculty down there. So I had a pretty good understanding of Arkansas and some of the issues around a very rural and somewhat poor state. So I thought there'd be some nice contrast between the two, and specifically the fire-based volunteer approach that's used in Washington State to a predominantly for-profit, private, you know, setup in the state of Arkansas. So very different models. Now, the third model in Maryland, it was more of a state-run kind of EMS system where we have a lot more control and really more of a hybrid between the two. But this gave us a really nice ability to contrast some of the organizational structure issues that might be of interest. So this is a picture of the town of Republic, Washington, which is in the far north central part of Washington State. It's a beautiful community. If you're into the outdoors and fly fishing and anything that relates to enjoying that kind of an environment, this is a great place to go, but it's completely off the beaten track. You're at least 2 hours by ground from a level two trauma center or from really any hospital with significant capabilities. Because of the remoteness of this area, often in the wintertime, you can't fly. So even if you can fly a helicopter from Spokane, and so you get an idea here, so Republic is right up in there. So even to get a helicopter up there, often you can't fly because of either fog in Spokane or snow and severe weather. So this can be, you know, a 2 hour plus, sometimes 3 hours to get to a real hospital with pediatric capabilities. Okay. So the challenge there from an EMS standpoint is not only is it 2 or 3 hours, it's each way, right? So then you're taking that volunteer service out of service for potentially half a day. So it's a major issue when you have these kinds of events with children. Plus, without the right, if you have a critically injured or ill child, you might have to pull, you know, nursing resources from the local, small local hospital just to be able to transport a child with more advanced needs. So anyway, we chose a variety of locations, both in eastern and western Washington, to focus on this. Predominantly, the driving factor was that these were remote areas that had geographical constraints. So we went out on the Olympic Peninsula, where to get to a significant hospital, you had to cross the water via ferry or fly over via helicopter if you were able to, or some of the islands that we tapped into as well, where you had to take ferries or find other ways to get there. And really, that's kind of the common theme, is that these are geographically isolated communities that certainly limits the resources that are available. So we ended up with 80 providers that participated in the focus groups, fairly evenly split, a few more in Arkansas than Washington overall. Probably a little bit over-representation among women among our EMS providers, so that's more because of the volunteer base. We typically see in rural communities it's very difficult to recruit and retain EMS providers, and so you end up seeing more women than you do in some urban areas where it's still a predominantly male-driven profession, although that is changing. Mostly white, and that's probably not at all different than the composition of rural Washington and rural Arkansas in terms of the populations in those areas. And call volume ranged from about 3 calls a month to up to 100. So some rural volunteers, rural paid providers were very busy, and others, you know, would get that occasional call. So a lot of variability in terms of the amount of call volume. So here's just an example, some of the common themes. So hands-on skill training was probably the number one identified need that was identified by EMS providers. They really wanted more practice. And how do you do that? Do you develop, you know, simulation? Do you bring in a mobile training van? We discussed a lot of this as part of the focus groups and got a lot of good input from the EMS providers. But the common quote here is, so we don't see enough kids to get good at it. We need more practice. And that was a common theme in both cases. So kids, you know, the good news is they're not getting seriously injured and ill all the time. But again, these are aging communities, so there aren't that many kids either. So the exposure among rural EMS providers tends to be really low. So when they do get a critically, you know, ill or injured child, it's scary. And they're really struggling with how do we have enough experience and training to be confident when we do get one of those kinds of cases. So lack of funding and difficulties recruiting and retaining providers, this is a major issue. Certainly in Washington, in the volunteer community, it's a real challenge. Right? So you have communities where people would say, and this is kind of counter to what you think of, is that you know, if you call 911 during the day, right, on a weekday, nobody's going to respond. Because all the EMS providers leave to go to work, and they work in other communities, so they're not there to respond. So, you know, it's counter to kind of what we think about in terms of volunteers, that they're physically not there, so it creates some issues. So you see, you know, those being recurrent themes. How do we account for that? How can we address that? So, and of course, the replenishing, you know, the aging volunteers is really an issue, and how do you recruit younger people when a lot of younger people are moving out of rural communities and moving to big cities. So there's definitely a resource gap there. So long transport times, response times, these are all significant challenges. In most, you know, in urban areas, you might have a response time for EMS of, you know, 8 minutes, maybe 10 minutes. In rural communities, it can be 45 minutes is the response time. It's typically their standard. In wilderness areas, it might be as soon as possible with no response time requirement. Simply, you know, reflecting that we have huge geography to cover and very limited resources. So, but then once you get to the hospital and the local community, this is the recurrent theme, is EMS providers saying, we really don't want to take we don't want to take children to the local hospitals. We know they don't have the resources. So there's a desire to bypass and to move beyond that. So pediatric, errors, we asked about patient errors, and very consistently people felt like there's probably more patient errors occurring among children just because of the lack of training and experience. Inappropriate utilization by parents goes both ways, right? So in Washington State, parents are more likely to send their children by their own vehicle, not call a 911, stick them in the back of the minivan, and drive them as opposed to using EMS because of the challenges of getting the wrong response times. In Arkansas, it was the opposite. Right? It's a paid system. If they didn't have gas, sometimes they would call EMS to get their kid to the doctor. Not at all what we saw in Washington State. Very different issues around over and underutilization of EMS. So, but child restraints and not having an adequate ability to restrain children in the back of an ambulance was consistently a problem in both states. So, okay. So these are the comparison between the two, and just to run through it. So training needs were both issues in both states. In Arkansas, again, they're paid for-profit agencies, so this had more to do with employers not letting their staff go to Little Rock or to the Children's Hospital to get that kind of training. In the rural communities, it had to do with there's nobody to pay for. Right? They have to work. They don't have resources. They can't afford to actually take a day or two to go to the big city to get this kind of training. And you can kind of run through some of these issues around, around call volume. All these are consistent themes that we saw throughout. And I think that there are some strategies that could be specific to the organizational models, and we're kind of working through some of those in terms of strategy. So clearly some opportunities to improve. EMS providers in these rural communities were extremely pleased that we were asking about rural EMS issues for children, and we're very glad to be involved and more than willing to offer their expertise and their experiences to help us work towards that. And I think certainly there are specific strategies that we can move forward with to try to target this. It's still, it's a money issue. How much money do we have for rural communities? How much can we invest? But clearly children in these communities are missing out on some of the services that are available in EMS systems within urban areas. So I want to acknowledge both CDC and Johns Hopkins for faculty innovation grant that helped support the focus groups, but CDC also for my time when I was working there on this project. So, questions, comments? Yes, sir.
Very nice presentation, and I enjoyed the presentation very much.
Thank you.
Two questions. One is, what is the children's mortality rate in the emergency department? Two is, what is the most common chief complaint for the EMS
transportation? Sure. Okay, so for child, so in hospital sort of case fatality in rural settings, most children are not dying in rural emergency departments. Okay? And so mortality rate for children is very low in hospital settings. Okay? But what's happening in rural settings is these patients ultimately are being transferred to a higher level of care. Okay? So it's the time that we have that is really a critical factor. And so they may end up dying or having worse outcomes at the receiving hospital, but that's not showing up in the rural hospital data, right? Because those are patients that are transferred out and we don't have the ability to actually look at that. I did some of that work in Washington State with linked data from the trauma registry where you can look at sending and receiving hospitals. And so, but mortality rates are really low for children, and that's a great thing. Okay? But it also kind of makes it easy for people to say, well, it's not really focus on that. And the second part of your question was,
what is the most common?
Yeah, so respiratory, so seizures, injury, respiratory distress, those are the most common reasons for EMS calls around children. So now for parents that take their children to the hospital in rural communities, it can often be the same as it is in urban areas, which it might be fever, might be flu, might be, you know, other issues that are not necessarily, you know, critical and requiring EMS. But in terms of EMS calls, it relates really more to seizures and injury and respiratory distress.
We have one quick question for the
next speaker. We answered everybody's question. Okay. All right. Thank you.